a better way. You don't have to be another face.
And we are live just a few moments early today. This is episode 3461 of the Survival Podcast. Today is Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024, and this episode is called Starting and Running a Business. It's been a long time since I've really addressed this topic at the level that I'm going to do it today. It's going to be a pretty deep show with a lot of information, something I'd probably put together as a seminar and charge money for if I really wanted to, but you'll get it all for free today like you do every podcast we do. I am going to cover a lot and I'm going to go quick. And that means if you are in the live chat audience, guys, gals, I need you to make sure you follow a procedure if you want me to have any chance of following up with you today. Put the word question in all caps and then put your question after that and I will start. And remember, if you super chat me, it will automatically start and I will have no choice but when I get to the end of the show for Q&A to see your Q&A question. And you can do that for as little as, I think, 99 cents on a super sticker or whatever the hell YouTube calls it. So, yeah, we're going to dig into this topic deep today. I want to move straight out of the beginning and right into our housekeeping, I guess you'd say, at the beginning here with letting you know about some stuff from our sponsors so we can dive straight into this one quick. First, though, today, I do want to let you know about something Nicole Sauce is doing, or Nicole Awesome Sauce, as I have called her many times. She's put together a Learn from Legends self-reliance webinar series, and it is free. It's 100% free. It runs from, when does it run from? March 17 to 21, so it's 5 days. It's an hour every night during those 5 days. You'll hear from people like Joel Salatin and a lot of other really awesome people. And this is going to be great. There's a lot of things about it. I mean, you are going to learn from legends. You're going to get the Homestead Tsunami presentation from Joel Salatin. You're going to get connected too, though, because you can ask questions to interact. You might even win some cool stuff. So this is going to be awesome. Again, it's completely free. There's a link in the video notes below or in the show notes for today, or just go to the Survival Podcast and scroll down and you'll see it. Click the link, get over there, fill out a form. And it's Nicole Sauce. So, you know, like you're not going to go on some giant spam list or some crap like that. It's just a really awesome seminar series that she's using to help kind of pump up Self-Reliance Festival, which comes about a month and a half from now. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and dig on into this. I want to talk to you guys today, again, about starting a business. And I want to start off with kind of some preamble, I guess is the way you would put it. And part of that is the reason I decided to do this topic today as I was going over different ideas for a show today. I've said since I started this show back in 2008, one of the greatest steps you can take for personal liberty is to start and establish a successful personal business, right? Something that's either small or large, doesn't really matter, but it literally can pay your bills for you and you don't work for anybody but your customers, right? It's your company, it's your thing. And I still believe that, but I believe something else over the last few years has become reality. For many people, if you want any real personal liberty, this may be your only path. There's basically two types of people who are going to have real personal liberty in their life, I think, under this new economy that it's basically just we're living through the destruction of an economy, right? So a lot of people that had very good, you know, middle class, blue collar jobs in the past, they could live a great life. They'll live okay. They could be your customers, but they're going to struggle. And they're going to struggle for a long time. I don't care if Brandon gets reelected or the Orange Man rises again. It doesn't matter. We have completely, you know, the Orange Man talked about draining the swamp. What we've done is drain the value of the dollar. Inflation is absolutely crippling at this point. And the way that life works when you have a job, unless you're, and I'll tell you what I mean by this other category of employee in a second, but for most people, from good to bad, doesn't matter, anywhere in between, you can't decide, I'm going to make more money this month. You can't say, well, shit, the well blew up, so I'm going to add a product this month and pay for a new well and not have to dip into my savings what's left of it. You can't say, oh, shit, my property taxes went up this year. I'm going to add a revenue unit that's going to cover that into my business. You work for what you work for, and once a year or so, you could go to your boss with your hands out like you're begging for alms and say, may I please have a raise? And then they'll give you like a 3% raise and act like they did you a favor. And to be fair to them, they have costs, and if you ran a business, you'd understand that. But, I mean, I remember getting a 3.5% raise one time and having my boss talk to me like he had bought me a house. I also quit that job very soon thereafter because I saw there was no future in it. So, that you know, you don't have that, and that's always been the case, but it's just more important now. Now, what kind of person is there that makes the good employee that can have that really great life? They are the employee. And I don't mean the same income level here. I mean the same modus operandi. They're like a professional athlete in their space. The person who, if they decide they finish something and they're done and they don't want to work there anymore and they stop working there within a week without making any phone calls themselves, people start calling them going, hey, man, I hear you're available. Those people that when they go into free agent status, people are hunting them. Because they can pick and choose. And then you have other, you know, specific high-end professionals, et cetera, if they manage their money right. But the person with the everyday job, and I don't care if they're college educated or, you know, blue collar or anything in between, it is going to be difficult to navigate the next 10 years without having the flexibility of being a business owner. I'm not saying you have to do it. I'm just saying it is going to be, I'm not going to say it's the only path through. I'm not going to say nobody out there is going to get a job, you know, bolting wheels on cars or something and not have a good life. I'm not going to say that. It's just going to be a lot harder. It's going to be a lot harder. And the other thing I want to kind of talk about is why I don't do a lot of these shows and why I don't like giving business advice. And I just so happen to have a very pertinent example happen today from somebody that I told, I think you are a megalomaniac and you're insane. And so therefore, no. But what it comes down to is most of the time when people bring business questions up, they're not actually looking to start a business. They want to have mental masturbation about owning a business someday. And they'll toolbox fallacy their way around actually doing it. It's intellectual masturbation. I have zero interest in that, especially on this subject. There's three subjects that I really love to talk about on podcasts. Anything permaculture, regen ag, food and cooking, and business, right? And so in those spaces, I'm not big on the whole let's like theorize. I'm like, we know what to do. Let's get it done. So I don't like that. I also cringe at the thought that somebody would not pursue an idea because I said it was stupid or would pursue an idea because I said it was good. My opinion doesn't mean shit. I am not walking your path. I am not walking your journey. I'm not in charge of your life. I do not know your situation. I do not know what you're capable of. I do not know your market locally. I do not know how much work you're willing to do when you tell me you're going to put 20 hours a week into your side business. I don't know if you really mean you're going to do 40 or one. I have no way of accurately, you know, I don't have a crystal ball that says, hey, if you make a TV show loosely based on anime characters and you put them into colorful suits and they run this giant robot thing, it will be successful. Because when I first heard about Power Rangers, when I was much younger than I am now, I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life and kids would not fall for it. It just sounded stupid. It looked stupid. And 2 years later, I was standing in line with my stepson to get a picture with a fucking Power Ranger. So what do I know about your success? Here's a real-world example of that, though. I used to work in – I worked for like an affiliate marketing company called Cognigen. They did long-distance, local phone service, cell phone, stuff like that. It was free to join, but it was a network marketing-style company. And one of the guys that I had brought into the company, you get your free website and market your products. That's all it was. He said, I have this idea, man. I'm going to do a direct mail campaign to local businesses that have moved into their facility within the last 6 months or some shit. And it's going, you know, they're going to get this thing where they get a full review of their telecom needs and stuff like that. And I said, John, I think that you would probably be just as well off just throwing your money away or go out and have a party with it. At least you'll enjoy it. And he said, man, I wish I'd have asked you that before I did, because I already spent the money. I'm like, well, man, hopefully it'll work out for you. About 2 months later, I hear from him, and he says, Jack, you were right. And I was like, man, I'm sorry to hear that, because I knew exactly what he was talking about. He said, I didn't get a blip on it, but I learned a lot about direct mail from doing it, especially what not to do. And I don't want to get into all the aspects of it, but he put together a direct mail business, the kind where you get a mailer with a bunch of shit in it with coupons and all, except his niche was he went down to only 10 businesses. None of them could be in direct competition, at least for what they were marketing in the mailer. And they would all be themed. So you might have like a mailer go out with like one company was a roofing company, another did gutters, another did carpeting and flooring like that. And only 10. So you weren't getting this giant stack that you just throw away. And he learned how to do targeting. And I said, how's it going? He goes, well, my first mailers go out tomorrow and everybody already paid their bill. So no matter how it works out, I'll make money on it just if it doesn't work for them. About 90 days later, he told me his business was exploding. He wasn't going to mess around selling long distance online anymore. This was his new thing, and he was going to go out there and make shit happen with it. And he had built a successful business, and by the time I had that phone call with him, he had tendered his 2 weeks' notice to his job. Now, what if he had asked me first, and I said, that's a stupid idea, and he never, you know, put the pedal to the metal and tried it? Then that thing that he learned by failing, he would have never had the opportunity to succeed with, because he listened to Jack Spirka, who, by the way, shouldn't have been advising anybody at that point in my life on what they should or should not do with a business. This is 25 years ago, nowhere near the track record I have now. It was just my instinct. This is not going to work. And I was right that it wouldn't work for him for what he was doing. It was white noise in the background. But it led him to success. You understand that? So I don't like when somebody asks me my opinion or what they should do or whatever. The other thing is, I say this all the time, and people refuse to accept this answer, tax attorney and a CPA. Every time I do a show like this, I get a bunch of emails. Here's my specific situation. They start laying out laws and local rates. I don't fucking know. Right? You live in Sheboyganville. I live in Fort Worth. I don't know. And I don't have the time to do the legal research for you in your own backyard. I don't know enough about your business, tax attorney, CPA. So since people all of a sudden think I'm going to advise them on what corporate structure to use or whether a private membership association will work for their idea, I don't want to do that. I want to stick to principles, techniques, and tactics and methods, because those things are universal. And when you get down to, well, what business structure do I use? CPA and tax attorney. That's your structure. That's my answer. So that's why I do that. Now, let me tell you about this kind of example of the kind of shit that you get when you are in this space and successful. I got an email today from a fucking lunatic, honestly. He has this way that's going to give the whole world complete sovereignty over everything, all their data, all their information, their mind, everything. It's so awesome. His Jewish friend said he made a holy weapon, except he hasn't made anything yet. He has an idea. And he wants coders and people like me to help him with connections so he can build this thing that's going to free the entire world. That's how powerful it is. What do you think I told him? Basically, I gave him a slightly nicer version of go get fucked. Okay? Like I said, if you have all that, you don't need me. Right? Now, I don't know how to do coding and shit. So you don't even know if this will work, and it probably won't. But if you believed it the way you claim to believe it on a cold email to a person that doesn't know you from dog shit, right, then you would go out and mortgage everything in your life to fund it. Because if you just need coding, you know what coders work for? Money. You want me to use my goodwill to get work that's supposed to get paid done for free. No. So this is why I try to stick to the mindset of principles. And if you stick to that, then this will work for you. But when you start getting into individual cases or pitching your idea like that, it's not going to work. So let's start off with, there's some rules to business. One would be, you don't take your idea and email some dude because you saw him on the internet and think he's going to help you for free, because he's not. But here's actually six rules of businesses that are specifically ignored often by brand new entrepreneurs with small businesses, which you can forgive because they don't know, they're learning. But giant companies do it too because they have a lot of fucking ego and they think their brand means everything and it only means as much as your customer's last experience with your brand. That's a bonus one for you today for your principles of business and rules of business. Your brand means as much as the customer's last experience with it and nothing more. It really doesn't. Okay. So number one, your market is more important than your desires. It is something that I see the worst company in the world at this is an incredibly successful company. It's Apple. How many features did Apple users want? Steve Jobs was like, go get screwed. I'm not doing that. I don't like that, right? And sometimes a company has to make decisions like that. But here's what I mean by what you desire is nowhere near as important as what your market desires, or what you think is not as important as what your market desires. Imagine that when I released my compost course, none of y'all bought it. Well, what was the lead value add? You'll make the best compost. Here's proof. Look at the plant grow for the least work possible. That's the basic message we came to with it. It's a soil science-based method of making compost that's been adapted for backyard use. That's a feature. I knew that when I did it. I know to sell benefits over features, but I did that because I knew I had an educated market to sell into. But if it wouldn't have worked, what might I have changed that to? Grow huge amounts of food in your backyard at no input cost. That's a benefit. And so sometimes it's not even changing the product or the service or the offering. It's just simply changing the way you explain it to your market. So everybody has some level of a market that you can reach, whether it's 10 people or 10,000 people or 10 million. And when you put out messaging or product or service, because it could be any one of the three that's the weakness, to that market, and it does not respond sufficiently for it to be worth continuing with the way that it is, you only have two things that you can do. You can change the message or the product. So let's say it's three then, right? You can take this service. Nobody wants it. Microsoft was like, yep, nobody wanted a Zoom. That was a bad idea. That's because your marketing sucked, idiots. Just saying. That's how far back this goes for me in analyzing businesses this way. But yeah, like this product is dead. It's not worth making, right? Or a service where nobody wants it, you know, like, hey, we come in and empty your trash and we put suede garbage bags in your garbage cans. Gee, nobody wanted that service, so we stopped doing it, right? But then the other option, if you can't change the product or service and get a response, or you don't want to, or you can't just change the marketing and get a response, is you find a new market to push the information to. This is not always, but this is usually a mistake. If you're reaching enough people and nobody's buying, reaching more people will cost you more money for nobody to continue to buy. But sometimes it'll work. Sometimes you're just in the wrong vertical or niche of market, not product. So you have a strong vertical niche product, but you're in the wrong vertical niche market. If you're making something for engineers and you're in front of the general population, it's not going to do well. You need to target that marketing specifically into the engineering space somehow to make that clear. Next, passion is great, but passion in the absence of substance equals stupidity. Stupidity. I chose that word for a reason. It usually wakes people up and go, what? Is he talking about me? I don't know, maybe. If you have passion for a product or a service or a business or a brand or whatever it is, and you're out there with all the passion in the world, but you don't have the substance to go along with it, you don't have something that is marketable and in desire, you're just a really happy, excited person that's going to be poor. You have to have substance. People have ideas all the time. This concept, this guy that emailed me today, I think it's going to make the whole world free. Shit, if you have, like I said, shit, if you have that, you don't mean me. I'm sure the guy's very passionate about his idea. It doesn't mean anything. First of all, it probably ain't ever going to be a thing. It sounded ridiculous. You'd have to bring me a working prototype for me to give it any consideration whatsoever. And you'd have to do that with any investor. You're not going to go get a VC or an angel investor or anybody like that with that claim without something to back it up and a written report that you're going to ask for an NDA to go along with ain't one of them, right? There has to be substance to what you're talking about. You need to look at your business and say, if I'm my own customer, why is this so important to me that it qualifies for my money and my attention and my time above anything that competes with it? And when people say they don't have competition, they're either one, wrong, or two, stupid, or both. If you have no competition, right, that means there is no market for what you have and there's nobody filling it, and you have to build a market that doesn't yet exist. That is a great idea. It is seldom the case. And even when it is, yes, you have competition. I don't give a shit what you think about that. This is a rule of business. And here's how rules of business work. No one is going to arrest you for breaking these rules that I'm talking about. Those are laws and codes, okay? But there will be consequences for ignoring them. Whether you know they exist or not won't matter. You know, they say ignorance is no excuse for disobeying the law, right? I think that's a bullshit statist argument. But when it comes to business, the rules of business are there. They're like the person in permaculture that, you know, looks at permaculture from the outside and says, well, I don't want to do permaculture. I just want to grow food. Well, then do permaculture, grow food. No, because I don't want a food forest. You don't have to have a food forest. But the seven layer thing, I don't want seven layers. Well, the layers exist in space. There are dimensional existence. There's vertical spaces of various height, and there's horizontal spaces, and there's space above the ground and below the ground. And vining things go up, standing things, and all that exists. And if you don't put something in the space, then you have to maintain the space and keep the thing out of the space. So whether you agree with that rule or not, or whether you're aware of that rule or not, it's still there, and it will still screw you if you continue to ignore it. That's what I mean by rules of business. Next, it will always, and I mean 1,000% of the time, always be more work than you think it will. Always. And you need to think about that when you're planning to do a business and you're thinking how much effort you need to put into it. You need to plan that if you're running a business that builds decks and backyards and you're factoring in how much labor is going to go in from your workmen on that deck. It will always be more than you think it will be. And you can always bid a project and give the person a discount if they say no. You can't raise the price once they sign the purchase order. So you always need to be factoring that in. And what this makes me think of is how many young people, I want to be a YouTuber, I want to be a TikToker, I want to be a social media influencer. And they have no idea that the people that are actually successful doing that at a high degree work their fucking asses off. They work their asses off. All they do is make videos. Have you ever made a video? Yeah, let me see it. Okay, that sucks. So you have to learn how to even make a good video first. Then you have to get good at presenting. Then you have, you know, like there's so much to this idea of being an influencer. And there's a reason that we have people who have been completely deplatformed, right? Created new accounts and then became successful again, starting from zero. And it's because the system they're working is the thing, right? It wasn't that they got lucky. It will always be more work than you think, whether it's a content business like this, a physical product business, a real world service business, it doesn't matter. Next, no one will ever do it as good as you, ever, 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 never. Got it? And this is what I'm talking about when you start bringing on partners or employees. You will always care more than everybody else in your business because it's your business. And if you're the one with the initiative to get it off the ground and you bring a partner in and they should be just as bad, they will not. They will not. If you can find one person that cares 90% as much as you do about doing things the right way in your life, you are lucky. You are lucky. And that's what will happen. If you're lucky, you'll get one person who doesn't want it bad enough to establish their own You Inc. that will work for your Inc. and will treat it like they're an owner in the business. And if you think you found that person and you think the way to bring them totally on board is to make them a partner, offer them some equity or whatever, let them be that person for 2 or 3 or 4 years before you do it. Or if you really think you found them and they're a year in, give them a vesting period over a number of years to acquire that equity. And they don't actually have the equity permanently until they acquire all that's being offered in the options contract. Because no one will ever care as much as you. when you build a business and you like, if you were stuffing fucking envelopes with mailers, whatever you factor into the cost of people you're going to pay to do the job, you cannot base it on going through it and doing it yourself. That's a good base level, but it's going to be way more than that. Back to, it's always more work than you think it is. But it's because they just don't care. And if whatever number of errors you create, they'll create more. Whatever number of things you half-ass, they'll half-ass. They won't care as much as you. They shouldn't. They work for you. They don't own the company. And if you give somebody a piece of a company without them doing anything to earn it, they will shit all over you. Okay? So, again, no one will ever do as good as you, ever. Focusing on your competition is most often, not always, but most often really stupid. There is so much business in the world, and just about any vertical that you can go into, that the fact that somebody who competes with you got a customer is not why you didn't get one. Unless that person says, you know, you're running a used car lot, I went to your lot and talked to your salesperson, and I went down the street and talked to them. You guys had basically the same car for the same price, and I bought from them because your salesman's an asshole. Unless it's that cut and dry, what that dealership down the street's doing doesn't matter. And that's actual competition. When I used to do consulting, God, I hated it. That's another reason I won't do it. It would amaze me that you would tell a customer, this is what you should be doing. Like, okay, but we're not going to right now. Like, one customer I remember we had, I'm like, you're a perfect fit for using press releases to generate publicity, to generate leads and brand recognition in your market. Those are my exact words. Okay? They didn't do it. They were paying us a lot of money for our advice, by the way. They were on a $5,000 a month retainer, $60,000 a year to not follow our advice. 4 months after we had that meeting, I get a call from the president of this company. He's upset with me. And I want to know why. Well, it turns out one of his competitors is doing exactly what I told them to do. They had done one press release. It hadn't even got any attention. Probably the only person that read it was this dude on the phone with me. I had told him the exact same thing and exactly how to do it the right way, putting out white papers, using it for lead capture, etc. But he wanted to know, when are we going to start doing press releases at that moment? There's another bonus. I fired that client that day. I told them that there would be no way we could work anymore together going forward, that I would help with the transition to the end of the month, and we would not bill him for his last 30 days. But I didn't want to work with him at that point. He was shocked, and he thought it was a gimmick. So he called me the next day, and he said, you know, I understand what you're saying now. Can we work this out? And I said, no. No, because you got upset that we didn't do a thing that I told you to do, but the only reason you even cared is because your competitor did it poorly, by the way. So most of the time, you need to be like a racehorse with blinders. Focus on your lane and your customers. Your competition's not that important. It doesn't mean you can't learn anything from looking at them. If your competition is dominating you on Google search results, you can look at what they're doing and reverse engineer that so that you can compete better. But when it comes down to business operations, you need to develop your thing for your market and your people and your customers. Next, no business can survive without sales and marketing. And the key in that rule is that you must fundamentally understand right from the beginning that marketing and sales are not sales and marketing. They're sales and marketing. They are entirely different disciplines. If you have a person who's in charge of sales and marketing in your company, you're probably wrong. Unless your company's so small, you don't really have a choice. Okay? And because a marketing person is a marketing person and a salesperson is a salesperson, and having done both as dedicated, you know, and dedicated individual to both disciplines, I can tell you they're incredibly fundamentally different. Marketing is all the stuff that's pushed out to the customer or set up so the customer will pull it to themselves, there's push and pull marketing, that generates some form of response. At the point that that response is generated, it can be by a person or a website or a process, the sales process begins. Marketing is attracting attention. Sales is converting attention into action, with that action being, I'm going to buy your shit. Sales is the transfer of belief. So the first thing we do is we expose somebody to an idea, and once they're interested in the idea, we transfer our belief in the idea to them. And if you don't understand that, your business will not succeed. It just won't. It won't, because you will be out thinking you're selling when you're marketing, or think you're marketing when you're selling. And when you think you're marketing, but you're actually selling, you're usually talking to nobody because you haven't attracted the attention yet. So this can all be a very long, drawn-out process. You know, when I worked in telecommunications test equipment, you know, I had a contract that I negotiated with the FBI. It wasn't to spy on you guys or anything like that. I was a different person back then anyway. It was just for test equipment. Like, does this cable work, right? $660,000 contract. We didn't close that deal in a day. That took demos against our competition. It took back and forth on pricing. It was hard. But it was a long process because it was an expensive product with a lot of competition. But you might market something on a website, you market it, and 2 seconds later, somebody's on your website looking at it. And if they start taking action toward purchasing, you've gone from marketing to sales in seconds. Both of those are good, depending on the product. If I'm selling you something for $600,000 that I make $300,000 on, I can take a few months to get the job done. If I'm selling you something for $6 that I make $3 on, I have to do almost nothing, or I'm going to go broke. And the more customers I get, the more broke I'm going to go. So those are rules. Now, I want to talk about my thoughts on modern business for most people. Number one, for most of you, part-time starting is best. I didn't say it's the rule. We're out of rules. This is observational. Most people who have a job, if they just quit their job and jump into a business, they're not going to be successful. And they're not going to have enough time to figure out what they're doing before they actually can transition to success. And the financial stress will crush them before they succeed, even if they're on the right path. Success is not overnight. When it looks overnight, it's not overnight. When I launched the Survival Podcast in 6 months, it was successful, the way that people look at success. In 18 months, it replaced my income, and I walked away never to look back at corporate America. And people said, wow, that's overnight, Jack. I don't care what you say, man, 18 months. What about the 25 years of my fucking life that led up to it? What about the fact that when I was in sales and I was traveling all the time and managing a territory and spending 6-7 hours a day in a car, every time I was in a car, I was on, you know, CD University, because it was, you know, we didn't have the level of internet streaming we do now, right? And I was listening to books on tape and shit. When I wore one out to where it would barely play anymore, but it still played, so it would pass the test, I would take it back to Half Price Books and exchange it. And then when I was in my hotel room at night, chilling out, instead of out partying with my customers, I went out just enough to keep them happy, and I was back and I was reading books on business, and I was teaching myself how to do internet marketing. I was teaching myself how to do SEO. While I had a job paying me almost $200,000 a year, I was doing that. Now, that's not bragging. That's just telling you that's the kind of thing it takes to have overnight success. And some people will do it much quicker than I did. I got pretty comfortable in those positions, just kept moving to better ones, and that probably held me back as a true entrepreneur for longer than it should have. But, you know, everybody in their time, and 2008 was about as early as you went all in on podcasting, and I found what I loved by trying over and over and over and failing many times, succeeding and failing both. But part-time is probably the best start. If you do go full-time up front, don't get too comfortable. If you have a big stockpile of money, it's real tempting to just say, I'm going to pay myself $7,000 a month and just pay your and put it in an account and run a payroll for yourself. So you're still getting a check with your FICA and FUTA. And like, it's not what I was making before, but it is good, right? Your taxes, you can run a one-man payroll through Paychecks. .com. That was a payroll service we used to use, right? And there's other ones that'll do it. And you feel really comfortable, except that money is like a battery and it's draining every month. And it makes you way too comfortable without revenue coming in. And by the time you realize the problem, you're probably in the same position I started out with it. you didn't get enough time on the runway to get the plane off the ground. So if you are going to go all in, there is a place for it. And some people, it's the best move for them. But you do not want to be too comfortable. And if you are going to, you know, do some kind of drawdown on some reserve of capital, that drawdown needs to be a declining drawdown. It needs to be less, not more, every month. And there needs to be a transition period and an accountability to yourself. Next up, websites need to be active. They need to be active. Brochure, online brochures are dead. Your website needs to engage and cause action from your visitors. Now, I'm going to tell you something. The majority of the notes that I'm using for this show today are from a show that I did in 2015. The bullet points. I'm giving you the same information, but updated by 8 years of my experience. So I said that 7 years ago. 7 years ago. That's 9 years ago. Brochure websites are dead. You know what I still see online all the time? Brochure websites. That website needs to engage that person into doing something. Following you on social media, subscribing to your newsletter. What? I don't care. But it needs to be actively engaging. It can't just be homepage, about us, contact, and some bullshit page of links. People are still building websites that way. People are still paying people ridiculous amounts of money to build them websites that do that. What does your website do? What does it do? And I don't care if you are a local tire shop. It should still do something that compels that person to take some action while they're there, because most visitors, no matter how good your traffic is, this is what happens. They come to your website and buy. How many times do you do it in a day? How many times a day do you need to know something, look for something, check something out, go to a website, get a piece of information, be like, that was great, and then you're gone. And you don't, if somebody asks you the next day, what website were you on when you learned that? I don't know. You're lucky you remember it, let alone where you got it. So when somebody is on your site, you need to be engaging with them to take some level of action right away. If you're not, it's not going to work, right? Next, you will have one boss in reality when you found a business, and it will be yourself. You will be your own boss. And your boss needs to be an asshole slave driver. I had a t-shirt made one time, and it said, "My boss is an asshole, and I'm self-employed." And that's important. You have to be the toughest boss you've ever had, because you have to work harder than you ever have, because you're trying to create a business from zero. And I don't care how much you've built up in your life, how much experience or how much knowledge or how much capital or whatever, there was a point when you had none of it. And that's what I'm saying. That runway is longer than you think it is. And so at some point, you've come down that runway long enough, you're starting to pull back, and you want to see that plane take off. Hopefully, it's not a new one from Boeing. You know, they call it Boeing, 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 right? That's what they call it. That's an old joke. That means that they've had this problem before, by the way. But, yeah, you need to make sure that you are the toughest, hardest asshole boss you've ever been. And most people won't do that with themselves. I'm finally in charge. Let's kick back and put our feet up on the desk. And you're going to be poor. Next, in the beginning, nothing beats just telling people. When I started the podcast, I remember I would, like, at lunchtime, I would walk around, like, in a store or something, like a Home Depot, with my MP3 player, right, my iPod, right, and listen to my own show to critique it so I could get better. But usually, like, when I would go to pay, I'd have, like, one earpiece in, one earpiece out, and have it on pause because I'm not rude to people, but they knew I was listening to something. What are you listening to? A podcast. And back then, people would say, "What's a podcast?" They didn't know. You tell them what a podcast is, like, "Oh, I actually do a podcast," and I tell them the name of the podcast. I have had people buy duck eggs from us here in Azle, Texas, who I talked to back then. That's 12 to 15 years ago. that one or two of those people became long-term listeners. And then when you tell people, you can ask them to help you by telling other people. And we're going to get to that here in a minute. Now I want to talk about websites. And I realized that one of them, the brochure one, I had skipped ahead. So we won't do that one again. That should actually have been under this heading. Sites need to initiate a process right from the get-go. That's not being a brochure. I mean, it needs to, like, you need to think about a person comes here. What do I want them to do when they get here? I want them to buy my shit. Well, maybe, but there are multiple positive outcomes. An inquiry. How much does X cost? Is this covered under your warranty? Anything that makes them talk to you, those are buying questions. Buying questions are good, especially if you're in business. You want people to buy shit, right? So you need to initiate a process right from the get-go. You need to make it clear how to do business with you. Have you ever been to a website and you're like, this is my wallet. I have money. I want what you have. Take my money. Take my money. Take. And you can't figure out how to buy from them. You can't figure out how do I give you money? Or how do I get directions to where you are if you're a brick and mortar business? Contact us. Fill out this form. I just want your fucking address. I want your phone number. Right? Assuming you actually are a brick and mortar business with a physical location that you want people to come to. If you don't want to do that, then what you want to do is be clear that that's not what you are. You need to think of your marketing and sales process the way a salesperson thinks of prospecting a customer. Even though they're two separate processes, they do have some similarities. And one of the things we used to teach salespeople, and it was very hard to get this through their head, if you're not meeting your quota, you're not getting enough no's. We live in this artificially created world where the right answer is always right and it will always result in the positive outcome. But if I'm selling, I don't know, burial services to people that have a religion where they don't bury anybody, you know, they just do cremation or whatever, I'm not going to do well. So what do I need to do when I'm prospecting either with my marketing or my sales process? I want to get to know fast. I want to get to, if it's going to be a no, if it's going to be a no, I want to find out as quickly as I can so I stop wasting time and energy on the no. Because then I can immediately start prospecting another prospect. So I want no's quickly. And by having it be clear how to do business with me, if someone's on my site and my site is a virtual business and you order a product and get shipped to your house and they don't want that, then nothing I do will change that. That's a deep-seated, intrinsic characteristic of that individual. They're my dad. They want to come see you when they buy from you, and they literally want to be able to come punch you in the mouth if you rip them off. Okay, he's an old man. That's the way he's going to be. Okay, fine. You don't want to waste your time with him. You don't want him emailing you. Where's your location? You don't want to start an email chain with that person. They're not going to do business with you. So when you say we are a virtual business, right? Like we do not have a physical address that you can visit. We don't, we sell online only, whatever it is. Be clear about it. Because the person, as many people as there are that don't like that, there's people that's exactly what I just want to buy the shit and have it show up. I don't want to go down to your showroom and get it. Right? Or I want to find something. Right? If you have a site or a business designed to help people find other businesses, you don't need them coming to you. You need them to understand, though. It needs to be clear what you do and what you do not do. Again, the brochures are dead. A business is its customer base. Business is its customer base. One of the companies I worked with years ago, a company called Sage Telecom. They were one of the last local phone service providers in the country. It's before everybody went full cellular, but it wasn't long before that. This was the end of the road for people that competed with AT&T for local phone service. And a giant company called Silverleaf Capital bought the company, and I did not like the people at all, and I immediately resigned, and then they tried to retain me, and I had a discussion with the guy that was like the head Bob. We called them the Bobs, like from Office Space. They were that bad. And when we had that discussion, he asked me, why do you think we bought your company? And I said, for the customer base. He said, one of the reasons that I want you to stay is because you're the only person I've asked that understood that. Everybody else thought that we bought you for your customer service, your product offering, your marketing collateral, whatever. The only thing we bought was your customer base. And I'm like, yeah, you want to strip it down and ride it into the ground and make a profit off it in a mining operation, so I'm out. But yeah, I know that. That is the value of your business as your customer base. When one company buys another company, they're buying customers. If you want to make shit, you can make anything today. There's some Chinese chop shop that will build it for you, or some high-end shop in America that will build it, or in Germany that will build it. You don't buy somebody so you get their product. You buy it so they get the customer that buys the product or the service. And that means that your focus needs to be building a customer base. This is why, even though I do things like I'm an affiliate for Vivor and I'm an affiliate for Amazon, that is not my primary business, and it doesn't matter how much money it makes me. And the reason is, when you go buy, let's say, from Amazon, from a product I recommended, and you buy, you know, Timbo's Timbo tool or whatever it is, when I go look at my report for that day, I can see somebody bought one of these things, but I can't see who you are. You're Amazon's customer. I'm just their affiliate. I don't have a Rolodex of people based on their products that they bought. I can't then look at that and say, well, here's all my people that bought gardening shit. So this next product, I'm going to direct target market. I don't have that relationship in that revenue model. And that means that in my primary revenue model, that what I need to be doing is building relationships. I want you connected to me on social media. I want you in my email list. Those are the two things I want. And I don't care what social media. I don't care if you follow me on MeWe or Twitter or Noster. You know, I do care. I'd rather you be on Noster than just about anything else. But no, the Telegram channel, the Telegram group, I don't care what it is. I want to make sure that I can touch you. And if I can't touch you, you'll forget about me. I'm not that memorable. I have to be able to touch you. The rule in marketing is the 7-touch rule. If you touch a customer in a positive way 7 times, they will always remember you in a positive light, and you always have the opportunity to sell them. It's also the average number of touches necessary to cause a purchase to happen. Again, the 7-touch rule, you can look it up if you want to know more about it. But a business is its customer base, and your email list is your customer base. You don't have that, they're not really your customer. Because when you're on social media with them, will they see what you put out? It's not even their choice, is it? The algorithm decides what they're supposed to see that day. Today, we didn't want you to know about your gardening thing you're really interested in. We wanted you mad at the Orange Man, or we wanted you mad at Biden. We wanted you to see this idiot that posted a video of himself being an idiot that you're going to get mad at, right? Right? All right. And your site is not designed to please people who won't ever buy from you. That's back to getting your no quickly. You are not in the business of worrying about people who are not your customers and ever will be. You have to accept that a home run from a website is 1% conversion, which means 99% won't. If you can convert 1% into legitimate customers that are repeatable customers, you can be tremendously successful. If you can do better, great. But 1% is what you need, which means 99% you don't. So you need to focus on the content, the information, the call to action that most pleases the people who will potentially do business with you, and ignore everything else. All signal, no noise. All right. Now, I also want to talk about what I call the 6 abilities of business. I could probably write a book just called The 6 abilities of business based on these 6 bullet points. And the first one is market. If I don't give them all up front, then we'll go through them. Marketability, referability, profitability, repeatability, adaptability, and scalability. This is the 6 abilities of business. This is mine. I've not heard anybody else talk like this. This is my concept. Though there's other ways it's been packaged, obviously. So marketability is your ability to tell your story. You should be able to very concisely tell the story behind your business. You guys have heard my story many times. Many of you lived it with me. But my story is, right, what's the story of TSP? Customer wanted a blog and a podcast. My developer couldn't do a podcast. He didn't understand RSS feeds and stuff like that. So I initially started TSP as a test bed so that we could deliver a product to our customer in that company. I did the show in my car. I brought my list, and I'm not going to do the whole thing, but you know the story. You know the story. I can tell the story. I don't have to think about, well, I'm not really sure about my story. My story is the whole thing because it's an individual-based business. It is a lifestyle business based on my lifestyle. So many of you knew where I grew up. You know the names of my dogs. You know the names of my grandchildren. You know what homeschool program I use for my kids. I'm very open. Now, that may not be what telling your story is. But what I have found is the more personal the story, the more of an advantage it is for a small business. We had someone come here to one of our workshops and couldn't sell anything until we pushed him so hard to tell the personal side of the story. The dude had literally had tears in his eyes, but his business also took off after that because stories sell. So your marketability is your ability to tell your story. So that brings us to your referability. How referable are you? And that is the ability for others to tell your story. Now, here's the thing. This is where you got to, like, this is something that corporate marketing people have a real hard time with. They want to control everything. They're worried about somebody using the wrong font when they, you know, mention your company in a PowerPoint presentation. Use the wrong, it didn't match our font perfectly. No one gives a fuck. Okay. And so the reason I tell you that is when it comes to referability, you are never going to get your customers to refer to you and tell your story exactly the way you want to. And everybody that does it will do it a little bit differently. You just want it to be so repeatable and memorable that it'll be good enough to get someone to look at you who otherwise would not have, that you didn't reach somebody you were already in touch with reached on your behalf. That's referability. And if you can't do that, your success is as limited as your marketing budget and your marketing reach. You will never grow beyond your own campaigns. And so many people work that way. You want to be highly referable. You want people to say, hey, check this guy out. Check this gal out. Oh, where'd I get this? Oh, I got it from this chick, and she makes these by hand in this little village in New Mexico where we're on vacation. Oh, you're not going to go there? That's all right. She has a website. It's pretty cool. Right? You want people to be able to tell your story. Why do you think when we started a duck egg business, I did duckchronicles.com? Because I didn't have anything else to do with my time. I wanted to weigh little ducklings every morning as a scientist experiment. Or it was like, if I'm going to build a business and I'm going to attract restaurants and chefs, I want to have duckchronicles.com and go, this is the story of the farm. And once you have that, you become, once you have marketability and you can effectively tell your story, you will by default end up with referability. The next ability is profitability. Profitability is the ability to yield a surplus. There are so many businesses that are like, I just need more capital and I can make more money, but right now I'm losing money. In that situation, it is not always the case, but it's most likely if you had more capital, you would lose more money faster. If I have 10 customers and I'm losing $1 a month, if I had 100, I'd probably lose $10 a month or more. You have to make what you have profitable if you want to expand it and actually become more profitable. We have to start looking at our businesses the way that farmers should look at their soils. I was listening to a presentation by Dale Strickler yesterday about improving soil health. And he said one of the problems we have in America today is everybody thinks the way to be more profitable as a farmer is to have a bigger farm. So we're like all I-hump in our neighbors about whose farm, when they go under or when dad retires and the kids don't want it, we're going to go get funding and buy next and keep gobbling up our neighbors to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But we're not even making money on the farm that we have. But we think somehow adding another 100 or 1,000 acres is going to make us more money. So many people use that exact mindset in business. I just need more customers. Well, are you making money now? No. Well, unless you have like zero, your customers should be operationally profitable if you think more customers will make you more money. You're not some giant tech corporation with a bunch of other people's money where you can wait 10 years to make a profit. You're just not that. If you were, you wouldn't be listening to me. You'd be out doing that. Right? If somebody's going to write you an angel check for $100 million, you don't need Jack Spirko. You need to put together the right team so you don't piss through that money too fast. But you don't have that. So you need to maximize the profitability. Anyway, Dale's upshot was, you know, I really can't build up without taking on more debt, but I can build down. If I start building my soil from where my roots go 6 inches into the soil every year to where my roots go 18 inches into the soil, I've got a 2/3 increase of my real land by increasing that vertical depth and therefore the profitability of the yields. We need to build our businesses like that, folks. That way, if you fine tune and adjust your business to be as profitable as it can be, you can expand almost infinitely at that point. You'll also go, yeah, that's a bad expansion idea. Or you'll be able to test expansion products and services very, very carefully. I should say very low risk. Where if it doesn't work, you're not Microsoft that spent gazillion dollars on the Zune that nobody even has one as a paperweight anymore. Now, Microsoft can do that because they're a giant global multi-billion dollar corporation. Again, you're not. So when I did the compost course, for instance, again, if that had not sold, then I lost all the hours I put into it, but I didn't spend a bunch of capital to do it. And if it's successful at all, it's successful because it's a soft deliverable. In other words, when you buy it, it's there. I don't have to package it. I don't have to ship it. I don't have to do any of that shit. That was a soft test. You could come up with a physical product, offer it. So you're a physical business. I can't do it low risk, Jack. Yes, you can. You find out what the cost of production is going to be, right? Because somebody will build anything you want that's buildable. You find out, so then you figure out your COGS, what your COGS are going to be on it. Cost of goods sold, which is the cost you pay to have it manufactured and delivered and back up the warranty and everything else that goes with it, factoring in some percentage of returns that will not be resellable, all of that, you get your COGS down. Then you create the product for pre-order. You put up a page and see if anybody wants to order it and pre-order from your existing customer base. If you get enough orders, you go into production and you tell them you're really pre-ordering this. If you get like 3 orders and you need like 30 for this test case to be valid, you tell the customers who pre-ordered it, we've decided not to do this. Here's your money back. See how low risk that is? And you can do that a couple times so you find the right way to build deeper with the footprint you already have. It is way easier to sell an existing customer a new thing than to get a new customer into your market. What? Because you have a relationship. You've built trust. You have integrity as far as that customer would not be your customer if they didn't trust you. Again, we're talking small businesses here. People buy shit all the time on, you know, Walmart.com or Amazon.com or whatever. They don't even really care about the company behind it. They don't care about the brand of the reseller. When you're here, when you have that relationship with your customer, the true relationship, adding on is the easiest way to grow. It's easier than buying a company and then trying to train a new group of customers to trust you. They trust the brand you bought. It's a strategy and it works, but building what you have deep is really the way to go. Then we have repeatability. Repeatability. An ideal product is something people buy every week, every month, every quarter, or every year from you. It is not a one-time purchase. Because if I have a one-time purchase model and Bill buys from me, great, love you, Bill. But next week, I don't have time to worry about Bill anymore. Bill bought the one thing I sell. It's a lifetime purchase. Bill's never going to buy from me again. I might care a little bit about referrals from Bill, but in the end, I really don't care about Bill. And you know what I really don't care about Bill? When I gave him a product with a 2-year warranty and it's 5 years later and he's pissed because it broke. I don't care about Bill at all at that point. He's not going to buy another one. He wants me to honor a warranty he never had implied, and he's useless to me now. That sounds harsh. But I'm talking Vulcan logic here, not your emotions. If Bill's never going to buy from me again, and I've fully met my obligations, if that thing had broken, you know, at 1 year and 364 days, and he turned it back to me, I would have said, here's your money or whatever I agreed to do in the warranty. And that date has come and gone, and Bill is a one-time customer. Why do I care? If I'm smart, I don't. Because I need to take care of Tom or Mike or Dark Horse next, right? That's who I need to take care of next. And if I'm worried about Bill, who I'm never going to make any money from ever again. That doesn't mean if I don't know Bill, I might not be like, hey, let me tell you what you can do about that. Or, you know, do you want another one or whatever? But in the end, if you have customers that come back to you time and time again, then you cultivate and build relationships. This is why, you know, companies that are highly successful sold things like phone service. People pay their bill every month. Banks make money because you pay your mortgage every month. And they print money when you take out a mortgage. I run a membership program that, you know, I do lifetime sales, but you notice how seldom I do that? You know, I'll do a lifetime sale for $300 and I'll put up 10 for sale and I make $3,000 in 5 minutes. Why didn't you do that all the time? Because it's one-time money. That doesn't mean if you're my lifetime member that I don't care about you anymore, because I have other things and other parts of our relationship. But a good business, you're going to be able to sell to a customer more than once, or you are terminally limited in the size of your actual market because you sell and you're done. So some sort of consumable, a repeatable product or service offering, and that can be done by expanding to other products. But that ability is repeatability. It's incredibly important, especially in a small space. Adaptability. Adaptability is the ability to evolve and be sustained. And this is where you have an extreme advantage over even a mid-sized company as a small business. It was amazing to me. Friend, I mentioned Sage Telecom before that buyout happened. We want to do this change to the website, and the customers won't even know it. It's the code that's on the back end. I can do it in 5 minutes. It required 3 meetings with 3 different technology people inside the company, and I had to explain to them what it did and why we were doing it, but they hired me to do it because I'd already done it before somewhere else. A marketing initiative. It's a nightmare. And if you get into a company like a big company, like a multi-billion dollar company, it is the bureaucracy in those companies makes the bureaucracy of the federal government look like amateur hour. Everybody's got their little fiefdom that they're worried about and interdepartmental billing and I don't like this and why aren't you using my supplier and you don't have any of that shit. You have agility and you have to use it. You have to use it. You know, I have 2 female dogs, and they've gotten into it one time. And Lucy is a much bigger dog than Belle. But Lucy now doesn't want nothing to do with any problems with Belle. She bowed up on her, and Belle literally tore her ass. She didn't really hurt her, but, like, it was very clear, you're going to lose this. And we pulled them apart. Why? Because Belle's a Malinois, and she's just fast. She was able to use agility to overcome a larger opponent. Right? Agility and aggression, right? That's what you have. You're scrappy. You have to be able to make changes. You have to be willing to try shit. Like, one of the biggest things that screws people up is they're worried about everything being perfect before they try it. Throw everything at the wall, and when something sticks, grab that as a vertical and go at it. That will make you adaptable. You need to be thinking of new ways to reach your customers, new ways to do better, to improve your results. If you see a problem, don't ignore it. Figure out how do we adapt so that this problem becomes the solution, like permaculture. Next, you need scalability, and that's your ability to grow sufficiently. This is why I am a fan of soft deliverables, right? Podcasts is a soft deliverable. I don't charge for it, but it is the product of my business. Don't think that what I'm doing right now isn't part of my product offering. It's a freemium model. You get the podcast for free and the other stuff costs money. If I do a good enough job on the podcast, you might be interested in it. A very simple model. But I can scale. Let's say that I was selling a hoe, right? A physical product like our new discount vending partner, easydigging.com, a grape hoe. And I built the best grape hoe ever. And I went out and to test the market, I went out and I got 500 of them made, and I sell like 300 of them. And then I get on some big TV show or something and 1,000 orders come in and I've only got 200 in inventory and they take 6 weeks to get to me from the manufacturer. Oops, I'm not very scalable. Let's say that I got on Joe Rogan somehow. And I get on Joe Rogan and I reach, 4 million people or 11 million people or whatever it is. And out of that, people hear about me, they come to my podcast, and the next day, 1,000 people buy MSV. What do I have to do? What do I have to do? The answer is really nothing. Transfer the money to my bank account from my merchant account. Person buys MSB, email goes out, here's your login information, you know, namaste. And I'm not saying I don't value that person. I'm just saying, like, I built a system to do that for me so I don't have to manually do things for customers one at a time. I might have, with that many new customers, I might have some customer service and all, but it's minimal. It's minimal. If I'm making and shipping product, I have to think about scalability differently. When I first started the show, I got a lesson in scalability because HostGator said unlimited bandwidth. And then when we went to 2 terabytes a month of bandwidth, they said, no, not really. We didn't really mean it when we said it. And I ended up with my website shut down at 9 o'clock at night. And I was on the phone till 1 o'clock in the morning to get them to turn it back on. I'm like, I will move, but you can't do this to me. And they said, yes, we can. And I eventually got through to somebody at the company that realized how much damage I could do to them. And he gave me basically like 60 days to get off their boxes or to find a solution, which they couldn't do. And that's when I found my current provider, which is 100terabytes.com. So, but all I had to do was buy a bigger web server. So as long as the money was there, the scalability wasn't a problem. You have to think about scalability. So let me say those again, because you can literally run an entire business off these six concepts. Marketability, which is the ability to tell your story. Referability, the ability for others to tell your story. Profitability is the ability to yield a surplus. Repeatability, the ability to sell the customer many times. Adaptability, the ability to evolve and be sustained. And scalability, the ability to grow sufficiently with your business. If you can do that, you can be successful. And it's probably easier than you think it is. It's also probably harder than you think it is at the same time. Don't let it talk you out of doing something. Simple basics here. One, you should have a core product or service. I don't know if John Dowie's still here. He was saying he was in and out. But Dowie does all kinds of shit now. Dowie buys rain barrels or plastic barrels really cheap. There's a couple holes in them, calls them rain barrels, and sells them at 100% markup. That's one of the things John does. John sells maple syrup that he doesn't do nothing except get from somebody else and sell to his existing market. But John Dowie started, John sells quail eggs, and I think some duck eggs too. But John Dowie's core product at Dowie Farms is microgreens. He built the business on microgreens and then expanded it. And that's what the business is known for. So when you're talking to a chef and say, hey, we could put quail eggs on your menu, you're now in a different place than somebody on the phone saying, hey, I got some quail eggs. You also have an opportunity in that situation because you have that core product or service and you're touching that customer. What else do you need? There's nothing better then to talk to your customers and say, what else do you need? And half your customers say they basically want the same thing that you don't have. That's easy. That's a home run. You go get that thing and you put it in your customer base and you go, 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 go. Full throttle. You know how many businesses do that? Not many. Not many. And I mean businesses that do have personal relationships with their customers. I'm going to have to take a time out. My wife's not home today, and I got a dog barking at me, and that is the I will poop in the house if you don't let me out bark. I'll be right back. The trials of live podcasting, man. Anyway, let's keep going here. So you have that core product or service. You talk to your customer. They tell you what to add. There's nothing that can't be done with that. I recently had somebody say, you talk about hating money and not hating money. Maybe you should do an episode that's just all ways people hate money. If you run a business and you don't do this, this is a way that you hate money. And if you hate money, money will hate you. And what do you do when you hate somebody? You stay away from them. So if you make money hate you, money will stay away from you. And when you literally have a successful business and you have a couple thousand people that do business with you on some frequency, and you don't say to those people, if Me Inc. had a product, what would it be if it was perfect for you? Then you hate money. Because son of a bitch if they won't tell you. Son of a bitch if they won't say, I want this. Now, when you get one person wants a thing, you don't do it. But when you get that, when you get a response, let's say you surveyed your 1,000 customer database and you got 20 of them that tell you that they want a thing that's the same, it's probably 200. Most people won't take the time to tell you, but some will. You just need to ask. Next, get moving fast. Long product development is not a business. You can take a long time to develop a next product, but you got to get products that sell up and running quick to fund the operation so that you can sustain long product development. And this is a huge problem for new people to a business. They are so used to being in a seat or doing something equaling work that they do not understand the fundamental principle of business is no profit, no business. So the person is working hard every day. They're actually doing something every day. Maybe they're putting in 12 hours versus the 8 hours they did when they had a job, right? And they feel like this means something. But if it's not resulting in revenue, it means nothing. If it's not resulting at least in positive actions that eventually will result in revenue, it means nothing. You've got to get something to the ground, to the customer, money in for work out quickly, or you will die in business. It is like trying to live without eating and drinking water. You need fuel for your body or you will fall over, and then they will throw dirt on top of you because you stink if they don't. That's what will happen to your business if you don't get something running quickly. You also, again, when I talked about the core product and listening to your customers, you need to listen to trends, not individuals. The one person that always has an idea about what you should do next that has not been successful in business, you do not need to listen to that person. My dad used to say, never listen to somebody unless they're more successful than you are. As I developed myself over the years, I realized that was a little too arrogant. That was a little too arrogant. And then I found the book, Richest Man in Babylon. I read that book. It was life-changing. You should read it. It's available for free as an audio on YouTube, by the way, if you don't want to buy it. You should totally, totally absorb the stuff in that book. And I found some of the rules in that book, and I found crossover with it, and I modified the two to come this way. I will not take advice from somebody about anything that they have not demonstrated success in. So you can be a podcaster that's successful, but my show's bigger than yours. I'll still listen to you about something you can do for your podcast because you might have something to teach me. I'm not so arrogant to think, well, I got more listeners than you. I won more awards than you. I make more money than you, so you don't have anything to teach. No. But if somebody starts telling me what to do with my podcast, and I'm like, so what podcast do you have? Well, I don't have any. Okay, have you ever run a business? Well, no, but I have some good ideas, man. I'm probably not listening. That doesn't mean I won't listen at all. You know, I'll just roll it around in my head. Okay, yeah, maybe, you know. But I'm not going to take it seriously. But here's an example. Like Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. I have a much bigger show than they do, but they're successful business people. All around successful business people. And they have a successful podcast. If Bones said, hey, Jack, I think you should check this thing out, I'm going to check it out. When it comes to my customers, I have a different standard, but it still needs to be more than one. Because you will always find the one person that will tell you, if you just put the zipper on the other side, I'd buy 10. First of all, no, they won't. Second of all, no one else will care. You have to find the trend, not the individual. Not the individual. That's why I don't like telling you what you should and shouldn't do with your ideas. By the way, your idea is worthless until you put action behind it. Next, Excel never lies. Now, if you put garbage in, you get garbage out. Any programmer will tell you that. But Excel doesn't lie. But you will lie to yourself. You will. And this also has a lot of analogs to just sales jobs as well. When I had my first really big sales job, there was a gentleman that I really didn't work for, but he was very high level in the company. He was like COO, I think was his actual title. Was it COO or CTO of the company? And when I was out in California for initial exposure to company product line and training and stuff like that, he was kind of a guy that kind of took me under his wing. His name was Forrest Baker. And we were sitting out having a drink one night, and he said, "I want to tell you the secret to sales." This guy's not a salesman, but hey, you know, he's a guy that potentially signs my paycheck or decides if I stay there or not. So I'm going to listen, even though I was pretty young and pretty arrogant. He said, the thing about sales is you get really, really excited over stupid little shit, and you get really, really depressed over stupid little shit. But if you just talk to your customers, they'll tell you what they need from you. And if you just do that, you'll spend a hell of a lot more time excited than depressed. And you need to be excited to do what you do because it's hard. Okay. Obviously, I took that to heart because I wasn't even 30 years old. I was 25 or something, 26 when I heard that. And I'm telling you exactly what the man said today. So I obviously took it to heart. But there's a problem with that. And that is, to stay motivated, you stay positive, and you have to. But you can't make good decisions on bad data. So when it comes to whether this thing's going to be profitable or not, you build a worksheet for it, you stick it in Excel, and you look at it. And if it says it's not profitable, no matter how much it feels good in your little heart, it's not going to be profitable. You need to figure out what variables you can change and change them until the profit looks worth doing the work, and then say, is this reality? Because you will lie to yourself. And so even though I use Excel in this example, what I'm saying is you need concrete data points in your decision making. If you do not have that, you will trick yourself into believing in things that are not going to work. And every time you fail, you could have been succeeding doing something else. So you've lost the time twice. Real, real simple. Jesse says, I was out of hearing. What was the Babylon book? The Richest Man in Babylon is the book. It's totally worth checking out. It was written in the middle of the Great Depression. I can't think of the guy's name that wrote it now. The name that's coming to me is the guy that wrote 1491. I don't know why, but now that his name's there, the other guy's name won't. Clausen, George C. Clausen, yeah, is the author of the book. Next, no marketing will ever beat pure hustle in the beginning. Remember when I said that in the very beginning, nothing really beats just telling people? Hustle, but properly directed hustle. Again, running around and doing a lot of shit that doesn't result in anything is no good. But like, people should be like, you wore them out. They don't want to hear any more about your business. You should let everybody know what you're doing, because the person that's like, whatever, I'm not going to care, I'm not going to buy from Jack, he's a jerk. But sooner or later, he'll probably talk to a friend, and that friend will be like, I was looking for this thing, and everybody wants to help their friends. Well, I know a guy. All of a sudden, your referability's kicked in, but it's only because you hustled. You know how many people have businesses and their friends don't know anything about their business? Now, let me tell you something else, though. Build the business and then tell your friends. Build the business and tell your friends, because human nature is the crab pulling the other crab back in the cooler. Anybody's ever caught crabs, and I don't mean the kinds that go on your body. I mean the ones you eat, right? You catch these crabs. Who used to catch crabs? Tie a piece of chicken on a string with a weight, and throw it in the water, and pull the string up, and put a net under it, and you throw the crab in the cooler. Well, you get a bunch of crabs in the cooler, and as they cool down, they get really slow. But the last few that went in are all still, you know, anxious and trying to get out. And what happens is the one crab is starting to get out the side of the thing, and you're going to have to tip his ass back in without getting pinched. Another crab reaches up and pulls his ass back in. There is that. There are people that they just don't want to hear your bullshit, so they want to demotivate you because they want misery and company. If you have those people, you can get away with them. But a lot of people, they are going to be like, are you sure? That's a lot of risk, right? I remember when I bought my second house up in Arkansas, and my brother-in-law said it was risky. I'm like, no, that's not risk. Owning more real property, and I'm paying less for my house than you are for your SUV, dude. You have a depreciating asset that costs you $100 more a month than my appreciating asset, but I'm the one taking the risk. right? But that was, I didn't say that to him. I didn't make a big deal out of it. I let it go because I knew he meant well. He meant well. And you have well-meaning people. And here's how I'll explain that. You tell somebody, I'm thinking I'm going to open up a restaurant. There's a lot of people in your life that would probably go, you know what, man, if that's what you want to do, I know you're going to be able to do it. There'd be a lot of people, and they're not the people that are just crabs pulling you back in the box. There's a lot of people that would just be like, man, restaurants fail so often, and they're going to try to talk you out of it. So if you told them you're going to open a restaurant, they'll give you all the reasons you shouldn't open a restaurant. That's not what you need at that moment. And the only people you should be talking to about why not are people that have run restaurants, or at least worked in the space. And that doesn't mean they were a server for a week back in, you know, 76 or something. But if they were really in the space, then you can gain a lot of information by talking to them. That's also in the Richest Man in Babylon book. But if you told them, I've opened up a new restaurant, it's called Jack's, it's at the corner of 7th and 19th or whatever, you know, 7th and Main. When can I come? So establish the business and then tell the people that might try to talk you out of it after it's established. The psychology is totally different. Then they want to know, what can I do? How can I help? There's no way to talk you out of it because you already did it. Just a little add on there. And then everything I say could be both right and wrong at the same time today because I don't know your business. I don't know your business. One of my favorite books is called Illusions, written by Richard Bach back in the 70s. And in the book, Richard meets a modern-day messiah, like an analog to Jesus, who flies airplanes in the middle of farm country for $3 a ride. And they're talking one night, and Richard says to Donald Shmoda, the modern messiah, how do you know all these things? And he's like, they give you a book. He's like, a magic book. And Donald throws him the book. And he opens it. It's just a series of sayings. Like what the student calls the end, the master calls a butterfly, shit like that. And Richard goes, well, how do you, there's no instructions or anything. How do you use it? He goes, you hold in your mind the thing that you're trying to solve, and you open it, and whatever's in front of you is what you need to hear. And again, Richard's like, a magic book. And Donald's like, you could do it with anything. You could do it with anything. You can do it with a Snoopy comic book. If you're in the right frame of mind, you will be able to frame an opinion based on anything that makes your mind come out of where you're at. Well, this whole storyline goes along, and in the end of the story, Donald gets murdered by somebody who kills him with a shotgun. The book falls onto the ground, and Richard picks it up, and he's hit in the gut. It says everything in this book could be wrong. He just didn't understand it at the time. There's a prologue, an epilogue or whatever, and it explains, and he meets his friend in a field, and you know, it's a fantasy book anyway. But there's a lesson in that. Someone is going to go out next week after hearing this and say, screw Jack, he doesn't know me from Adam, and they're going to do things differently than I've instructed today, and they're going to kill it. Because I don't know everything about your situation. Or more likely, they're actually going to do the things I said, but as a third-party observer, I wouldn't recognize that you're following my advice from way over here. Everything I tell you can be wrong in some circumstance. In the end, you won't know until you put the plow into the soil what it looks like underneath the sod. You're going to have to take the step, and if you don't do it, you'll never discover the path that's in front of you. I can't walk your path. I can't see it for you. I can't tell you what to do. I can give you general principles of advice like I've done today. That's it. I can't tell you what to do in your business any more than I can get up in the morning and watch the sunrise for you on your behalf. It won't do anything. I could watch the sunrise and tell you what I saw, and you'd be like, I watched it too, Jack, and it looked totally different. Well, I'm in Fort Worth and you're in Sheboyganville. But the truth is, you could be my next door neighbor and we'll see the sunset differently or the sunrise differently. A few degrees. Maybe I went outside 30 seconds before or after you and the hues of orange or red changed in that. We've all seen it, right? You go look at a sunset and just a few minutes later, I've done this. I go outside in the evening, maybe put the ducks to bed or whatever, and it's just this gorgeous sunset. And I go tell my wife, Dorothy, you got to come out and you got to see this. She's like, 1 minute, you know, and you're like, no. And it's a minute or two. And she goes, oh, that's pretty. Like, oh man, it was so, we've all seen it, right? It was so much better. You just hit it at that peak. When you're trying to ask someone else what you should do other than general advice when it comes to running a business, that's what you're doing. You're asking them to describe the sunset instead of looking at it yourself. Only you can do that. That's what it takes to be successful in business today. So in the end, just do it. Don't seek my approval. Seek the approval of paying customers. Like I said, when I was a young man and somebody told me about what Power Rangers was, I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. I still think it's stupid, but I can't argue with a $1 billion success. I can't argue with the fact that 2 years after I heard about it, I'm standing in line with my son waiting to talk to a Power Ranger at a mall back when people still went to malls. There's a lot of things that I thought was stupid that I still think are stupid that were successful. And kids, stuff like this shows you have different places where you can spot success and areas you're blind to. The Barney thing, I love you, the purple dinosaur. What? How did that get successful? There was something, I can't even think of, the Wiggles, when my niece was a little girl and they came and visited us in Pennsylvania. And they found on the cable channel her show that she liked was the Wiggles. And it was a dude named Captain Feathersword and four dudes that follow around that seemed kind of like the Loafers, if you know what I mean. And they're singing songs all the time about eating mashed bananas. I'm like, how is this a thing? And they're like, you have no idea how big a thing this is. It's crazy that those things were successful. But what defines success in a business is a few things. One is that it is literally financially successful. But if you want more than that, it's that your customers love who you are in their life and you value them in return and both sides have integrity. That's a truly successful business. But to get those other three things, you have to have something that's financially viable. And so Jack Spierka can tell you your idea is dumb. And when you call Jack and say, well, Jack, I'm netting $5,000 a day. Well, son of a bitch, I was wrong again. I don't have any problem with that. In fact, it makes me very happy when I hear that. I only have a couple questions today. Teletubbies. Yeah, they were even dumber than the Wiggles, but they were successful. I got two. Question for later. Tactics. That's not a question, Survivalizer. Do you want to explain that better? That's a word. What do you mean by tactics? I gave you many of them today. And John says, I've heard you say make your passion your business. How do I find out what my passion is? This question is way more common than a lot of you would know. One thing you can do is go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. I'll add a link in the show notes today for the audio side. There's a link in the video notes below if you're watching the video, over to the audio version with all the resources and everything in it. And there was a show I did that was literally called Finding Your Passion So You Can Follow It. And probably just searching for passion at thesurvivalpodcast.com will find you that show. So I did a whole show on that. But this is another one of those things, you know, I can't do it for you. I don't know what you're passionate about. But one of the ways to find your passion is to go out and try as many things as possible. You know, I think that's why I found my place with teaching and podcasting. When I was in sales and marketing and building companies, one of the things that I ended up doing a lot of was standing in front of rooms of people and teaching. And like when I was in cable test equipment, let me tell you something. I wasn't passionate about cable test equipment at all. It was just a job that paid really well and a good company that I went to work for that got bought out by a company I would have never went to work for. That's all that it was to me. But it gave me that step up in life. It's, you know, back then people would say, well, what will make you go to another job? And I said, I'll walk across the street for $10,000 a year. You want me to walk to another state? We need to talk about 100, but you know, I'll do it. I'll take the next opportunity where I can learn more and make more. I'll go do that. And in that, I got exposed to what it's like to stand in front of a group of people, in front of a room with everybody paying attention to you and teach them. And wanting to be good at what I did, I decided to use analogy. And analogy is one of the greatest teaching tools available, and most teachers don't use it, and they're very boring and very flat. I listen to a lot of presentations on things that I want to learn about, and I halfway through it, I'm like, this person's really smart, but I can't listen to this. There's no feeling. There's no emphatic belief in what they're saying, right? And so I have to get better at this. And I developed a whole series of ways of explaining boring shit like what crosstalk is and what attenuation is and why we test for it, and using sports metaphors and analogies for it about if you're in a crowded stadium and I'm talking and you're five people away from me, you don't hear me as well as the person sitting next to me. But when the other team scores or your team scores and the crowd cheers, and now the attenuation's fighting crosstalk down and giving these presentations. And I would have these people come up to me who'd been good technicians and had been working for 10, 15, 20 years. Maybe they were like a Bixie certified tech or a journeyman or something like that, and say, I finally understand this. That felt good. That felt good. When I had a guy come up to me and say that he ran something called the Cisco Academy for high schools in Philadelphia. And again, I was in the Northeast at the time. And when I come to his various schools when I had time and talk to his kids that were like 11th and 12th graders about the future of technology, because I did this talk on cable testing, I liked that. And I realized that educating was the thing I was most passionate about. And I'm passionate about gardening, and I'm passionate about prepping, and I'm passionate about business. So I like to teach, and I like to teach the things that I like to do. And so how do I tell you how to do that? Well, the only thing I can tell you is go out and explore life in every way you possibly can and grab on to everything and try everything with gusto long enough to see if it's something you really want to do. And then if you turn it into a business, do it in a way that you keep the passion alive instead of killing it. There's a terrible old movie. It was called Hope Floats. My previous girlfriend prior to Dorothy got me to watch it one night. And she said, but hope does float. And I literally said, so does shit. It was a terrible movie. But there's one scene in it I still remember. I don't even remember the rest of the movie. But this guy that she's into, he makes furniture and cabinetry. And he doesn't make much money doing whatever he does. And she sees his house and this gorgeous cabinetry, like artwork. And she says, why don't you you're good at this. Why don't you do this? People pay a lot of money for this. And he said, oh, that would be great. Take the thing I love and destroy it. Well, you have to find the balance so that you don't destroy your passion when you find it. That's the best I can do for you there. And a few other questions have come in, so I'll take those and then we have to wrap up. Nurse Wang says, any recommendation for books on the subject beside Richest Man? If you haven't read Richest Man, read that one first. A person who gets a lot of flack because the book's supposedly fiction, and some of it is, I'm sure, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. The follow-up books aren't as good, but that book is great for switching on the mind. Anything by Harvey McKay or Harry Beckwith would be fantastic to check out. Right, those are some of my favorite authors over time. A lot of them are dead. Jack Welch, Jack Welch's books, etc. I'm a huge fan of Jack Welch's overriding philosophy is simply that if you're running a company of any size, you should be firing 10% of the people every year. You should be just getting rid of your bottom 10%. That way you can hire new people who become part of your top 20%, because your top 20% do most of the work. So the 10% you think you're giving something up on, my friend David and I just had this conversation. They were over for the weekend, him and his wife's a nurse and a really in-demand type of nursing. And she said, well, what do you do? How do you do that when you're in a place where it's already hard to find anybody? And both of us said the same thing. When you constantly get rid of the bottom, the best people want to work for you. And that's the kind of stuff you'll get from Jack Welch. I also just mentioned this book yesterday. It's not really a business book, but it's by a business icon. And it is a fantastic book for learning how to develop leadership. And that's Where Have All the Leaders Gone by Lee Iacocca. It's funny how most of my favorite authors are dead now. But that's the stuff I would recommend on start. Dark Horse says, thoughts on leaving corporate America and never returning when self-employed. If you can do it, I mean, that's what the whole show was about. I don't really know what the question is there, because that's what the whole show was about, is leaving corporate America and never looking back. I would say, if you mean what has it meant to me, I can give you a little bit of that personally, and that is it's enabled me to be home all the time instead of traveling all the time. It's turned me into more of a human again. I've recovered much of what I lost of my soul in that world, because it will take it from you. Doing it is why we're in a position that my wife and I can homeschool our grandchildren. Doing it is why I have my little farm and my ducks and my geese and my dogs, right? And the freedom that's in my life. And I'm going to tell you, do I think it's reckless? No, I think it's actually reckless not to. And that's interesting that he added that, because here's what I'm going to say. How many people have had their lives touched in some way or another positive because of the survival podcast, or the things that we put in motion that other people did to touch somebody else? I could do 3 hours just on businesses that came out of survival podcast, even though that's not what we do. We talk about it once in a while. We encourage it, right? We don't have a mentorship program, right? You can't pay me $1,500 for a business mentorship program. I'm not doing that, because I know that the people that will anyway with what we give away for free. But I could sit there and go through all of these people who have built success, and many that have more influence in the world today than I do. Dr. Ken Berry has almost 2 million YouTube followers. And he started out as a fat, sick, overweight doctor driving around in his car, in his own words, listening to the survival podcast and getting kicked in the ass. So what we did here, and it's hard to say this because you sound egotistical, but I'm saying this for all people. What you do matters. And if you're not willing to take steps like this because it's risky or irresponsible or whatever, but it is your path, it's the path you're supposed to walk, then how many things won't happen because you didn't, for other people, many who you will never know? So it is the most rewarding thing in my life outside of being a husband, a father, and a grandfather. And it has improved lives of people that I'll never hear from or know. I get paydays all the time that have no money in them. Jack, you're a jerk emails with a story of how somebody changed their life because of what we did. If I didn't get into that car, if I didn't take that little MP3 player that was, you know, about $35 of equipment, it was about as big as this little remote control in my hand, and sit it in my lap and put that shitty headset on. If I didn't take that shot, then anybody that's listening to this today would have never heard it. Anybody that has a business today, because it's not even me, but some one of my guests, we had Luke, whatever the hell his name was, on, which is why John Dowie has Dowie Farms. Luke Callahan came on, explained the microgreens business. John Dowie was unhappy with his job in the food service industry and said, fuck that, I can do that shit. That's how John sounds, if you've never heard him, right? Fuck that, I can do that shit. And then he did. So John would have done something. But there's no doubt that that's where that genesis came from. We have people out there that are building entire communities, but their encouragement to start a community came from here. And there's hundreds of people in my past that have had different influences on me because they took risk, because they went out and did it. It's more than just a paycheck. It's freedom, and it's the ability to follow your passion. With that, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Real quick, if you did and you like what we do, remember, I don't hate money, and I do need money to pay bills like anybody else. But I want to encourage you, if you haven't done so yet, to take our bioreactor composting course. The results are pretty impressive. With some things that went on this morning, I didn't get it, but I actually wanted to bring one of the plants that you're seeing on the screen if you're watching the video right now in today, because 4 weeks after that picture's taken, they're unbelievable. This is the best compost you will ever make for the least amount of work. Check it out. It's at homefoodsystems.com. And I just got the syllabus over to Tom. Here it is right here for the cover crop course. And I'm building that deck out now. That's probably a month out before that course will be available at least. It's going to be a little bit more money, but the compost course is the place to start. Next up, remember, you can always support us by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. I'm bringing around the Vivor galvanized raised beds again today for a couple reasons. One, it's the time of year that everybody's getting those gardens up and going, and it just costs less and is easier to build your garden beds out of these prefabricated galvanized steel things that you bolt together. And you can get them in 2 foot deep, like the one that's listed on the site, and there's a link for the one that's only a foot deep. But what I've done today is I added a video where you can actually see it in scale, because you really don't have any scale on the Vivor website to understand how big 4x8x2 it really is. And also I'm reconfiguring my beds in a different configuration, which is kind of cool, and it's in the video. And then the video prompted some questions, and I added a PS to the write-up that answers those questions. So if you want to put in some garden beds, this is the way to go. With that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I hope you take it seriously that what you do matters. And I'm going to tell you, so we had a discussion about, like, was it reckless or whatever to leave. I'm going to tell you a true story that was one of the closest moments I've ever come to having tears in my eyes in public where somebody wasn't dead. And I'd only been doing the show a couple years. I was at a prepper convention in Colorado, Denver. And a guy named Dan Brown, like the famous author Dan Brown, came up and talked to me. And but he wasn't, that's not who it was. It's just that happened to be his name, very common name. He was a veteran. He had been dealing with PTSD. He had lost his kids to his wife in a divorce. He was drinking himself into the ground, and it wasn't fast enough for him. And he said one day he decided to hell with this. And he laid in his bed. He put a gun in his mouth. He put a .45 in his mouth, and he sat there. He was going to blow his brains out. And he said that in his head, he kept hearing my voice, which was at the time my 10th tenet. Now it's my 12th tenet of preparedness. What you do matters. And it wouldn't go away. He couldn't get rid of it. It would not leave him alone. It stuck there. It just, and I think somebody in that position is looking for a reason not to. And when they go ahead and do it, it's because they couldn't find one. And that was his reason. He told me that story in a booth at a prepper convention. And on one level, it made my heart sore. On the other level, it broke my heart that one of our veterans who sacrificed so much for what he believed in needed a voice from a podcaster to do that. But that's what might be in your future. You never think, I'm going to start a podcast and I'm going to save a life. But it's not the only one over the years. So what's more reckless? What's more risky? Taking risks to follow your true path so you can fulfill that which you're here to do, or playing it safe and not doing it? Which one's really more reckless? Those of us who will try what others will not are the ones that make a difference. And that difference often extends to people you'll never meet and never know. Every one of you that's ever had a job owes the fact that you had a job to the fact that somebody built a business so you could have one. Now, I don't mean they did it just for you. I don't mean it that way. But had they not acted, had they not been reckless, had they had not been willing to take risk, there would have been no company on the name of that check, on that letterhead, that paid your bills so you could feed your kids. The question is, do you want to become one of those people? All right. I will answer this one because he super chatted me. John, it has nothing to do with today, and then we're going to go. Could you make that bed a wicking bed with a pond liner? Is it sturdy enough? I would not. Metal that's relatively thin, I mean, it's heavy duty, The difference between soil weight and water weight is extreme. If I was going to build a wicking bed out of a bed like that, what I would do is I would probably get the 1 footer and I would dig a foot into the ground and set that soil to the side, and I would amend it to fill my bed back up with, and I'd put the water underground and the bed on top of it. That's how I would do that. So anyway, I also realized as I answered that question, it did have something to do with today's show because it's our item of the day. Anyway, with that, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back tomorrow. We're going to have a cool episode, and it's going to fit well with what we talked about today. Jason is going to be on. He's going to talk about finding the show, becoming a prepper, having the whole world fall apart, and then rebuilding it all back together. With that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with that episode.
Just run you round. Said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.